Red Film Radio. I'm Matt Micucci from the 60th Cork Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by filmmaker Mark Aiken, who is here presenting his great documentary, very powerful documentary, Dead When I Got Here. So thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and the first question is the obligatory question. Our listeners, I think, would like to know, first off, what the documentary is about.
Well, it's about a man who manages a mental asylum that's run by its own patients in Mexico. And I guess the main theme of the film is compassion, because he arrives there nearly dead. He recovers, and through the process of recovering, he learns how to care for other people, bearing in mind that he'd spent most of his life trying to destroy himself through drug addiction and a very sort of addled lifestyle, really.
And the obligatory follow-up question to that would be, how did you find out about this particular place and this particular map?
I read about it in a couple of books, one by a journalist from London and the other one by a reporter from the US called Charles Bowden, who's written a lot of books about the borderlands, as they call them, the area between northern Mexico and southwest of the United States.
So what was your initial reaction to not only the place itself, but also just being suddenly in this country that you've never been before and just presented in front of you with all these things that you, I don't know how familiar you were with those too.
Fear, really. One of my first sensations when I was on the first day of filming at the asylum, because I was on the first trip, I was just on my own, and I was told that I could film anything. So there I was amongst all these mentally deranged people, and I'd been told that some of them were quite dangerous and they might attack me or break my neck, but the worst thing is they wouldn't even know that they'd done it, because some of them are hearing voices that tell them what to do. So I was scared, but then I realised that I really had nothing to be scared about, and these people were actually being very generous and allowing me to film them. So I had to, each day my fear changed, my summation of the place changed, my conclusions changed, and I became more and more curious. So it became a real adventure. It's certainly the most exhilarating film experience I've ever had.
Yeah. And at what point did you realise that you wanted a driving story in the film, and that the care, the man who takes place of the this establishment, kind of...
That's a good question. After the first visit, I went back to London and I cut... I'd shot about 30 hours and I cut down an hour, which really was a kind of day in the life of the place. A very sort of traditional type observational film. There was no narration, no story as such, just, you know, they get up in the morning and passing through the day, all the chores they performed. But obviously, this is a mental asylum run by its own patients with very few resources, so it's a very strange place and quite shocking as well. So I started realising that the mentally ill people, the conditions they existed in, it was too much for people. And people said, well, we need a story, we need a character. I guess more conventional route into trying to understand this place. And I think I was a bit torn, really, because I didn't want to have to explain anything. I wanted audiences to encounter it the same way I had, but I think encountering something in real life is quite different to encountering it in a film. And I think I would have laid myself open to a lot of accusations of voyeurism and exploitation and these things, of just filming people and not contextualizing it in any way. So then I went back again 4 months later, and then I decided, actually, this man, Josue, his name is, was very reflective. His heart was very open, and I think I gave him an opportunity to tell his story, really. And then I started realizing that actually the film wasn't about this place. The film was about this man who happens to be in this place. So the asylum became the context for the film rather than the subject.
Yeah, and not but the other thing is that the asylum is still very important, and of course it's also important to tell the story.
The film wasn't an expose as such, and I never had any intentions of that. In fact, on the contrary, I was trying to present the people in a dignified light, because once I started overcoming my fears of them, I started realizing actually these people are running this place with less than their own mental faculties, let alone normal resources such as medication or doctors, nurses, beds, you know, heating, all these basic things that you would certainly expect in a place where people are weak and mentally ill. They just didn't exist there. So you've got to ask, well, how would I fare in these circumstances? I really can't say if I would survive. I doubt I would be tough enough, but who knows what kind of instincts arise when you're put in a situation like that. So I realized that I was admiring them, so I wanted to present them in a heroic light, but not in a sentimental way, but in as realistic way as possible. But the thing is that like last night's screening here, I had a couple of questions from people who felt that the way the mental patients were portrayed was quite shocking. I have to say, in defense of the film, most people don't see it like that, but of course anybody who does, of course, I've got to listen and try and understand where they're coming from. And I was thinking about it this morning, actually, and I think as a filmmaker, whether it's a stills camera or a film camera, whenever you point a camera at somebody, there's a dynamic that's set up, and whatever you record is open to accusations of exploitation. I'm not trying to excuse myself, but I think anybody who's ever filmed anybody or taken a picture, you'll know that dynamic is established, and it's kind of out of your control, because even no matter how hard you work to contextualize what you've recorded, to represent that person in a dignified way or a non-exploitative, non-voyeuristic way, then still when it's unleashed into the world and other people encounter it, you don't know how they're going to interpret it. So it's something, it's not within your own control. So this whole question of exposing a place and showing all the warts and the cracks and the dirt and everything is, I think it's fine so long as you're showing that there's something else going on, and you're not just it's not like some reality TV where you're portraying something to make the audience feel more smug and better about themselves. And I certainly haven't had that response from people, so it feels like the film is doing its job, you know.
Yeah, it's not a film that can be ignored, basically. That's another good thing about it.
Well, you say that, however, it has been ignored by the powers that be, if you like. A lot of funding agencies, a lot of broadcasters have passed it by, and of course they never explain why, although lately at festivals I have been inquiring after the rejection. I've said, can we meet? I'd really like to know what the problems are with this. And what I'm finding is there's a certain degree of censorship, because they are gatekeepers in a sense, and they I think they feel that showing mentally ill people in this context without some expert narrator, some kind of authority, and just showing them sort of in situ running their own asylum, they deem it too much for audiences. I would say, I would refute that and say they're wrong, because audiences, 95% of audiences are really moved by the film. They haven't got a problem with seeing people. And I think this is probably a problem with films in general, and documentaries specifically, where gatekeepers are preventing audiences from seeing films that they actually would enjoy seeing, you know. They look down on audiences. Yeah,
I agree with you, definitely. It's a problem that's it affects cinema in general, not just the documentary form. Final question, if people want to see this film and kind of want to find out more about it, how would they go on about doing that?
There is a DVD that's just been produced that has the main 72-minute feature and 100 minutes of other films and interviews and things that didn't make the main cut. And the best thing is to go to the website, deadwhenigothere.org, and there's also going to be a book released earlier next year, which is documents the whole experience of making the film. Because I have to say, I mean, this, it's been 4 years, this, and it has had a very profound effect on me, and in many ways it's changed my life. I mean, one thing's for sure is that whenever I feel like complaining about something or you know, moaning, I think of those guys and I think, well, it could be a lot worse, you know.
Yeah, well, that's great. Thank you very much for joining us and talking to us about it, your film Dead When I Got Here. Let's remind our listeners, and thanks again, congratulations, very powerful film.
Thanks, Matt, cheers.
Thanks a lot, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.